It's time now for Wellness Wednesday, a program featuring health professionals from our area medical facilities discussing a variety of topics concerning your well-being. Wellness Wednesday is a weekly feature on Q92 Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Angel from Appleton Area Health, and today I'm with Penny Horman. Penny's one of our nurse practitioners, and today we're going to talk a little bit about COVID. So, Penny, recently there was an outbreak of COVID at Appleton Area Health. Can you tell us, are things improving?
Yes, we did have a recent outbreak. A significant number of staff, residents, and tenants at Apple Ridge in the Care Center that tested positive. But we're certainly seeing an improvement. We haven't had any recent positives, and people are getting better.
Great. What about in the community, though? Are things improving there?
It seems though we had an increase in the facility, which is being reflected out in the community. We're seeing an increase in the number of positive patients or clients that are having COVID. So it isn't just in the cities or another town anymore. It's hitting here in Appleton very significantly.
And it seems like it's more than just Appleton. It's all the surrounding areas, the surrounding counties. It sounds like we have a pretty significant prevalence of COVID everywhere.
Correct. I mean, Ortonville, Benson, Montevideo, Dawson, Madison, we're all seeing a significant increase in the community, people getting COVID.
Yeah, so it's not just in the metro area anymore. Now we're all hard hit.
Correct.
So the holidays are upon us, and everyone I know is very frustrated with the recommendations to avoid gatherings and avoid going to bars and that kind of stuff. But why is this so important?
With the holidays coming up, we all want to get together with our families. That's besides just to eat. It's good to get together with our families for that connection. That's what we all associate holidays with. But with the recent increase in the numbers in the community, that getting together over a meal will increase your risk of transmitting the disease. For an example, Mayo Clinic had, I'm sure everybody had heard, over 900 employees out in a two-week period. Even though they wore their masks while they're working, they traced most of the transmission down to the lunch or the cafeteria, where you can't eat and wear a mask at the same time. So at the Thanksgiving dinner table, you can't eat and wear a mask at the same time. You're in close proximity, increasing your chance of getting the spread. Even if you would wear your mask at other times during your get-together, that meal time is a significant time of period where you can transmit the disease.
And so then the recommendation clearly is to only get together with people in your immediate household.
And the purpose of that is you live with them, you're not increasing your chance of exposure, where you invite other family members in, even though they're your immediate family, they're not part of your household anymore. And it's a tough call.
Difficult for everybody, certainly. So if one chooses not to follow the recommendations and they get together with family or friends that are not in their immediate household, what is the best recommendation?
Even if you get together with people who are not a part of your household, you wear your mask, you wash your hands and social distance, you're still taking that risk of transmission. And if you do choose to do that, it would be recommended to quarantine for 2 weeks after that because of the possible of exposure.
And that's really the only way that this is going to stop, is if we start quarantining and keeping our distance from others.
Yeah, that's That's how we're going to keep this from spreading. And we need to social distance and be responsible. It's all of our jobs or responsibility to help prevent this, not only getting it yourself, but preventing ones you love from getting it.
Mm-hmm. It's not the time to pass the buck, is it?
Nope.
So one of the other things we want to talk about today is masks. It's a very controversial subject. Some people are very adamant about wearing masks, and others are very adamant about not wearing masks. But why is mask wearing so important in trying to stop or prevent the spread of COVID-19?
COVID-19 is spread through droplets, the coughing, the sneezing, just airborne. And masks, even though we wash our hands and everything, if you're not wearing a mask, you take that chance of spreading it to somebody else. So you're not protecting only yourself, but you're protecting other people's. And part of that mask wearing is wearing it responsibly. You know, not below your nose or just underneath your chin. It doesn't do any good if you have your mouth covered and not your nose. You're still spreading droplets. And some people, due to some type of medical condition, claustrophobia, respiratory, indicate that, you know, they have trouble wearing the mask. Well, there's lots of options, thankfully. I never thought that that would be a industry, that you'd go to Runnings and buy a mask. But you have the face shields, the plastic shields that you can wear over your face. You have the cloth, I think they call them neck gaiters, that you bring them up, you wear them around your neck, and they're kind of like a bandana almost. And some people find them less restricting and constricting. And there is really no health risks to wearing a mask. We're not rebreathing bad air. You can exercise with them. I saw a video of a physician who rode her bike for a half hour and had no increase in shortness of breath. Now, everybody's different. Some people can tolerate them and some people can't, but we need to be responsible and wear something to help prevent the spread of this to others and keep it in check until we can get that vaccine.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing we hear a lot about, or personally I've heard a lot about, is herd immunity. And there's a certain thought that everybody should just try and get it and we'll all get herd immunity and then it'll just go away. But how does herd immunity actually work, and why is it not, why would that not apply to this pandemic at this time?
COVID is not going away. When the talk is about herd immunity, let's take measles, for example. Measles is a disease that isn't very common anymore, but is coming more prevalent due to people not choosing to be vaccinated, relying on that herd immunity, meaning everybody else becomes immune to it through either getting the disease or vaccinations. And so by you not getting it, not getting that vaccination, you're going to be protected or immune. Well, that just isn't the case in this. It's easily transmitted. We don't know everything there is to know about the disease yet. We're learning new things every day, and we can't rely on everybody else getting the disease to protect us. Mm-hmm. So do your part and protect yourself and others.
So when you talk about herd immunity then, for example, your example with measles, the person who isn't vaccinated certainly isn't immune.
Correct.
They just have a lesser chance of getting that disease because everybody else is immune.
Correct.
So with COVID-19 then, we just haven't reached that.
Right, and we don't know if that would apply to COVID, because we just don't know as much as we do about measles. Measles has been here for years. COVID-19 is a new entity, so we're learning about it every day, and we don't know if that herd immunity would apply.
Based on like reinfection and right, that kind of stuff, we just don't know enough about it.
Yeah, because we know people are finding that now people, once they have COVID, they can get it again.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we can't rely on everybody else being responsible and protecting us.
Right. And so herd immunity at this time just is not an option.
No.
And don't count on that.
And it would take years for that to even...
Absolutely.
Eventually happen.
Absolutely. So the testing for COVID-19, can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There's the rapid test, which we get the results in a half hour or less, and then there's the testing that it takes 1 to 2 days, depending on backlog at the lab, to get the results. Now, the rapid testing is starting to become in short supply because of the increase in number of people being tested. So we're starting to be selective and kind of triage who receives the rapid versus the normal 2-day test, for example. And what I mean by that, if you're a healthcare worker or in a congregate living center or have high risk for complications, that might be someone who would need to get the 2-day testing. The 2-day testing, or excuse me, the rapid testing, sorry, The rapid test is not as effective in asymptomatic people. Statistic I heard is that the rapid test in an asymptomatic person is only approximately 60% to detect the COVID virus. Now, if you are exposed and have no symptoms, the optimal time, the recommendation is to be tested between 5 to 7 days after exposure, but that still would not be the rapid test. It would be the 1 to 2 day, the longer test. Because, and even if you are negative, you still need to quarantine that full 14 days, because even though you test negative on day 5, you could still become positive on day 13 or become symptomatic. Mm-hmm. So that one negative test isn't a get out of jail card.
Right, and it's especially for patients or for people who have symptoms, correct? If you
correct.
Don't have symptoms, that rapid test doesn't necessarily pick up.
Yeah, it's not going to be as informative.
Informative?
Informative, there we go. As if you were symptomatic and we did the rapid test.
So, Penny, are you saying then that the rapid test should be reserved for people who have symptoms and not for patients or people who don't have symptoms?
Right. The rapid test is not going to give us the information we need or be as informative as the two-day test. The rapid test is way more accurate if you have symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have symptoms, it's not going to give us the information you need to protect yourself and your loved ones or us to take care of you.
Right, because even if you have a test on, like, say, day 5 and it's negative, that's not necessarily a get-out-of-jail-free card, because you can still test positive later, correct?
Correct, up to that 14 days. Like you said, if you test positive on day 5 or 6, that isn't the get-out-of-jail card to go and do whatever you want, because you still could be contagious and not know you're carrying the disease. We have seen quite a few people who test positive but have no symptoms at all, and they're contagious. So, you know, if they're not wearing their masks or not doing hand washing, social distancing, they're spreading the disease.
Mm-hmm. And because this disease then affects everybody differently, somebody who has very, very mild symptoms and may not even realize that they are sick could pass it on to somebody whose symptoms then could be much more severe. Is that true?
That's true. Some people have absolutely no symptoms whatsoever, to symptoms of common cold, feeling kind of achy, runny nose, to nausea, vomiting, severe respiratory issues. And it doesn't always seem to be, you can't always predict who's going to be more severely affected. I mean, we do know those with respiratory conditions or other underlying medical conditions have a higher risk of complications, but we still don't know everything there is to know about the disease yet, so we need to take precautions.
Mm-hmm. And so ways to prevent COVID-19 then are?
Social distancing, 6 feet, kind of like the mirror in your car. If you can read this, you're too close. So, you know, at least 6 feet at minimum. It's hard because you want to be closer to people. Wearing your mask in public, or if you're in a situation where you think there might be a risk, basically wear it outside of your own house. And frequent hand washing and or hand sanitizer.
So, Penny, when in... kind of wrapping this up, when are people the most contagious, or when do they really have to worry?
That's a good question and a hard question to answer. We know that once a patient becomes or a person becomes symptomatic, they are considered contagious in those 2 days, 48 hours prior to when they develop symptoms. And then the recommendation is at least to quarantine or due to being contagious for 10 days. Or there's always that caveat, you know, it can be longer if you're not improving or if you continue to have a fever. The rule for coming out of quarantine is to be fever-free for 24 hours without any Tylenol or ibuprofen and your symptoms improving. Not gone, but improving. Some people, their symptoms will be gone by that time, but some people, those symptoms last. They can last the cough, dry mouth, body aches can last for longer than that.
Okay.
So it's a hard question to answer, but once you become symptomatic, those 48 hours before are important to know who you may have transmitted it on to.
Okay. Well, Penny, I just want to thank you for, first, thank you for providing all this information for us. And second, thank you for all you do to try and keep, you know, patients and our community safe. You know, for a long time we heard that healthcare workers were the first line of defense, but I've heard now, or the saying now is that we're not. We're really your last line of defense. And it's important for everybody then to be responsible and take the initiative to wear your masks, socially distance, wash your hands, and do everything that you can to protect not only yourself, but your friends, your family, your community, and the ones that you love.
Join us every week at this time for Wellness Wednesday on Q92. Find out what's happening at our area medical facilities, get to know the people who work there, and pick up some tips on how you can live a healthier life.